welcome to We Didn't Start the Podcast. I'm Anne.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are two sisters going through the lyrics to We Didn't Start the Fire and sharing our memories of these historical events, our personal connections, and in the lack of either of those two, the fun things we found in researching these topics.
Yeah, I would definitely say most of it is just a journey and an adventure on learning about things that I had never heard about, or because a lot of these topics seem to be before my time, or, you know, very niche kind of topics that I just don't come across on my daily life. So it's been good.
Yeah, it definitely like a deeper dive on topics I know about sometimes, or a different perspective. Has actually been a lot of fun. And again, learning new things. Because today, one of our topics is Michael Jackson, and the other that we'll start with is Arturo Toscanini. And as a figure skating fan, I am like very familiar with a lot of pieces he's conducted. I knew nothing about the man himself. So this has been exciting.
And yeah, I had never heard the name before. So... Starting from ground zero.
Right. Let's get into him. Arturo Toscanini is an Italian conductor and is considered one of the most influential musicians and conductors of the late 19th and 20th century. And he's kind of known for like being a perfectionist and like having a good ear for detail and like perfect metronome quality.
Yeah.
And apparently like a photographic memory, or like a perfect memory, like because he lost his eyesight later in his life, but he was able to keep conducting because he just memorized everything so perfectly well. And he's like, I know what I'm doing. Let's go.
Yeah. So I've got my brother-in-law, he is a conductor and he conducts orchestras and stuff, and that's what he studied in school and got like his doctorate in and whatnot. And I asked him a bit about Toscanini because I, like I said, knew nothing, and I was like, well, he's a conductor, my brother-in-law conducts, I'm sure they know each other. And by know each other, I mean, you know.
Yeah, know about.
And so yeah, he was pretty familiar with him and has even read like a book on his life and stuff, he said. But he said the first and foremost thing about him is that he was, like, known for being tyrannical, almost a dictator on the podium.
Yay.
And that's what I read a lot, too, is that this guy was, his enthusiasm and eccentric personality, you know, really captivated people as he conducted and did the performances and stuff. And then, yeah, he really, behind the scenes, he pushed those musicians in like the, because he did all sorts of different like philharmonics, like the, and operas. He, I don't know, he did all of them. He did tons in Europe. He did tons in New York. And
yeah, he was like Scala in Milan.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He was the go-to guy. But yeah, he pushed all of those musicians to be their best. And I'm sure at times, I'm sure they, if I wish that I had time to research their experiences with him, the different musicians, because anyways, I'm sure it would be interesting. But yeah, very perfectionist, like you said. And something my brother-in-law also mentioned is that he was always very weary about critics and criticism and things like that, which probably, you know, goes hand in hand with being like a perfectionist. You know, you're typically very aware of your shortcomings, or what other people say you have shortcomings, and, you know, trying to be flawless. So, well,
yeah, here in the arts, you know, we all have imposter syndrome. We all like only hear our flaws. So, yeah, like I'm sure for him, being a perfectionist on top of that is just dialed up to 11. Like our entire industry is submitting ourselves for people's judgment.
Yeah, and I feel like when you're someone who's at, like, the top of your game, like, there's always going to be reporters who are trying to, like, find the flaws in you and will, like, even if, you know, will try their hardest to take any little thing and make it this big thing because, you know, that's, I don't know, that's how that, yeah, industry works, is to get views or to get, you know, people reading your article. Typically, you have to have some sort of idea that's different than the reader's idea. And mm-hmm. so if you're contradicting what everyone else is saying, then, you know, whether or not it's true or right, baseless yeah. or anything. Because, yeah, from what I've read, I can't say I ever heard the guy or saw him in person, but he sounds like he did pretty good and was pretty good at his job. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, probably a little crazy behind the scenes.
Yeah, and it definitely I can imagine that criticism, even if it's kind of just in a benign, like, we don't like the way you conduct, kind mm-hmm. of probably took on a different, like, connotation to him, because a lot of his life, like, he was very involved in politics, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not, just, like, he grew up in Italy and, like, you know, like, during the time of Mussolini and the rise of fascism, mm-hmm. and, like, he was very against that. And, like, he spoke out frequently against certain dictators and certain politics that he was not in agreement with.
Yeah, that's something that I thought was really interesting, too, was his outspokenness about the political climate at that time in Italy and what was going on in the world during that time as well.
Yeah, and he, you know, sometimes, you know, received persecutions for it. Like, he claims that he was, like, attacked by a group of the Black Shirts, which were, like, a militia for national security in Italy. Like, I think right, they're also called the Squadrismo, which is a yeah. cool name, but probably not a cool, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the one quote I came across is he was, like, venting to a friend, and he said, if I were capable of killing a man, I would kill Mussolini.
Right.
Which
yeah.
in Mussolini land would probably be grounds for death. So
yeah, I imagine Mussolini is not like the type to let that go. That's yeah. the whole point of fascism is like you lock that stuff down.
Yeah. And I don't know, it is kind of interesting that he was pretty outspoken about politics, because that's like a big debate, I feel like, in today's climate, is like, what are musicians or celebrities' roles in politics? Should they have opinions? Should they voice opinions? Should they use their platforms? Are mm-hmm. they supposed to just be entertainment, you know? Right. And I wonder what people thought back then about him, especially people in Italy. Like, were people happy? I mean, I know what the government was, their views of him. But yeah, like the everyday person, were they like glad that someone was speaking out? Were they mad? Were they like, just stick to music?
Right, you know? Yeah. Yeah, honestly, I imagine you're right. You're onto something. Like, there probably was kind of a lot of diverse opinions in the way that there is today. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't think people make it seem like it's this new idea that celebrities or musicians or artists are making these political statements, but I think it's been something that's always been the case. And like in every art form, there's always some sort of bias or opinion behind it, which typically then can be related to politics and, you know, mm-hmm. worldview and whatnot. And so it is just interesting.
Yeah, it's not like humans having opinions is something that only started in the 20th century, and or that humans having opinions who suddenly get elevated to a place where they can speak to the world suddenly like stop having opinions. Like, it's and the arts are a place where people, it's something like I've found, it's like through acting, you're forced to read a lot. With music, you're forced to learn about a lot of different countries' musical mm-hmm. traditions, and thus about a lot of different composers and cultures. It's like a place where you're almost forced to learn to see other points of view. So why wouldn't those people grow to have opinions that maybe differ from the culture they grew up in sometimes? And why on earth wouldn't they, you know, talk to their friends about it, except their friends are now 5,000 people.
Yeah. I wonder where the idea of like artists or celebrities are, you know, to be seen and not to be heard kind of a thing, like where that idea came from. Like, celebrities shouldn't have opinions. They should just focus on, or like athletes shouldn't have opinions.
Right.
They should just play the game. It's like, when did that, I don't know. Is that always been the idea, the people's consensus, or is that just like, when did that kind of shift happen? And I mean, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with like the access to the world now with social media and stuff like that, where it's so easy to voice your opinions.
And yeah, on such a larger scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cynic in me wants to say, like, it probably happened the second someone dared say something that was against the popular opinion. Like, because what? Because if you say, like...
Well, yeah, then it probably goes all the way back to... Who was the guy that... Oh, man, I blank, total blanking on my history right now. But, yeah, I'm sure it goes way back to, like, religious Catholic versus Christian ideas. Oh, what was the guy? Mm-hmm. The guy that, like, nailed...
Oh, Martin something Luther. On
the, yeah, the OG Martin Luther. Yes. Yeah. How he, like, started his own religion. But I just mean, like, that idea of, like, people... having, yeah, a difference of opinions. They either become radical, maybe, or it gets, like, back then would have just been kind of brushed under the rug. Whereas now, if you say something out loud, it's around forever and you can't brush it under the rug. And
right.
You just got to live with it. And I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we were preparing for our Taylor Swift and Kanye, I watched the documentary Miss Americana. And one of those things where they talked about, like, women in country music and, like, you know, the Dixie Chicks stated their political opinions and, like, got shut down, which I remember very vividly from when I was growing up. And, like, the idea was, like, you don't want to be like the Dixie Chicks. You don't want to talk about politics. We don't talk about politics in country music. And then I, like, thinking about that, I was like, wait a second. Women don't talk about politics in country music, because if you're a man... talking about politics, and the politics align with the conservative right that most of the clientele consuming money. They talk about politics all the time, and it's like, you're only talking about politics when it differs from that.
Yeah.
And again, if you're a woman, don't you dare. Like, so it's like, it was kind of interesting to me. It's like, a lot of times people only consider things getting political when the politics differ from theirs.
Yeah.
And Arturo Toscanini seems like a person whose politics differed from a lot of places.
Differed from the dictator, but maybe a lot of people were with him. In my mind, I like to think that when people are under a dictatorship, most of the people are not happy, but maybe that's just wishful thinking.
Well, I'm sure there's some nuance to it, because I imagine, like, growing up in that environment, Toscanini came to the States and, like, an entirely different culture, there were probably a lot of things people saw in him that are like, whoa, like, you're real right-wing or whatever. Like, you know,
He was very proud of his Italian heritage and, you know, a proud Italian.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, you know, America has, since the beginning, not been super welcoming to proud foreigners, but...
yeah. Yeah, so it's like there's probably a lot of nuance, but you're right. Probably a lot of people saw Toscanini and were like, I'm glad that he's speaking our truth. And
yeah, for sure. But yeah, he definitely wasn't loved by the government. And yeah, it was kind of interesting how often he went back and forth from, like, just kind of looking at, like, a timeline of his life. He went from, Italy to the U.S. to Italy to the U.S. to Europe to, you know, to different areas. And he went back forth quite a bit for that time, I feel like. But he was so popular around the world that everyone wanted him conducting and traveling and performing with their orchestras and their operas and whatnot. But
yeah,
kind of like a world tour.
Yeah.
His whole life.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a great life.
Yeah.
One thing I kind of love is, like, not only was he, like, great in the performing, but, like, he seems to be the person, like, when it came to the recordings on the gramophone and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
He seemed to be the guy, and, like, somebody who, like, there's a quote somewhere, and unfortunately I cannot find where I had it. somebody said of him that, like what happens in the concert hall, what might seem really vivid in the concert hall doesn't always translate to the recording.
Right.
But he could make it, like, sound just as vivid and wild and like, you know, that capture that sense of musical genius still in the recording. And that to me, like, I don't understand that skill, but that is a skill, because I definitely know from my own experience, like, you know, stuff that happens on stage in theater doesn't always translate to a video recording of it later.
Right.
That is definitely a different kind of magic. Mm-hmm. So I find that really cool. And like I said, as a figure skating fan, a lot of the warhorse pieces that get used over and over, especially like Turnado and like probably a lot of those recordings, I'd have to go like a deep dive and see, you know, who's using what recording of what orchestra. But a lot of them probably were conducted by Arturo Toscanini, because some of them are quite old recordings and like, gosh, they're just bombastically beautiful. Mm-hmm. So like, and they hold up today, some of Toscanini's recorded items. So.
Yeah, I was reading a bit about that too. Not too much, but I also heard like in his last, like later years, that was something he and like his son or something like that focused on, was like fixing recordings so that, yeah, people could enjoy them at home kind of thing, which is cool that he cared about that, because I feel like if I was a super popular conductor, I would leave that job to someone else. I'd be like, I did my part. You take care of this recording and you make it sound good. But it's something that, yeah, he was passionate about and good at. And I think we talked more about like the actual stages that he performed on, like the sound, like that, those studios, they then started using them for different things, and they used different, like, yeah, they really kind of shaped or changed the way that they recorded pieces and things like that, which is, mm-hmm. yeah, for the everyday person who doesn't get to go and is listening to these recordings, that is cool and nice that they get to have good recordings because he cared about it.
Yeah, and being able to take music and culture and mm-hmm. Experiences like this to the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I've got on Toscanini. He's, like I said, I didn't even know who he was at first. And yeah, well before our time. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, I definitely can see how his... how he was, yeah, very influential on that time. And yeah, I would say probably lots of people would argue he still has an influence today on conductors, how they conduct and mm-hmm. how they run an orchestra and things like that. And just, yeah, that lasting influence that he seemed to have had. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And not only like someone who is influential on the music scene, but again, just mm-hmm. in the political sphere, like he was somebody mm-hmm. who was involved in the great historical moments of the world.
Yeah,
like, you never yeah. want to feel like you're living through history, like as we have experienced living through historical events. It's like, can we just have a year where it's, you know, nothing happens? But mm-hmm. like he took part in what was happening around him, whether it be the wars, whether it be politics of his country. He lived life in all its aspects.
Yeah. Well, another person who lived large.
Oh, gosh, yes.
As our next topic, which is Michael Jackson.
Yeah. what is your first memory of, or your first perception of Michael Jackson? Your earliest that you can think of?
Michael Jackson is still, like, I was still really young when he was, you know, like, at his prime, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like, my earliest memories, I would say, that I have are, like, riding the bus home from school and overhearing other kids making, like, Michael Jackson pedophilia jokes. Like, him being a pedophile. So, like, my formative years, that was Michael Jackson, unfortunately. It was, like, was it 2005? He had another, mm-hmm. you know... lawsuit or thing that he had to go through, and then yeah, like the weird names he gave his kids was really big when I was a kid, and then his death was probably the next like biggest thing for me that I remember, because like when he was rising to fame and all of that, that was before, and I have like, you know, some ideas of that, because I like our mom, I don't know, I don't know why, but our mom talked to me a lot about Michael Jackson, probably because I was overhearing kids talking about him on the bus and she wanted to.
Well, yeah, and it was certainly a hot button topic of the time.
Yeah, But I would say, yeah, that's where my memories of Michael Jackson start.
But yeah, unfortunately, mine are the same, like, in the same way that Elvis did, and we'll get to him later. Like, I feel like by the time I kind of came into an ability to perceive pop culture and music, like, he had already become a bit of a joke for, like, some of the criminal cases leveled against him, some of his erratic behavior, like, his skin color changing, some by bleaching, some by, apparently, he actually had a disease that affected his pigmentation. So, like, a combined, it's like, there were a lot of people saying a lot of things about him, some fair and some not, but, like, his musical, like, people still recognized his musical genius, but it had kind of taken a back seat to everything else. And, like, when I see the larger picture of who Michael Jackson was, like, part of me is kind of sad about that. And the other part of me, like, does not fully understand, like, I don't know what he did and did not do that harmed other people. And so, like, I don't want to, like, I don't want to praise a person who is, you know, victimizing other people. So it's like I'm very conflicted about him as a human.
Well, and it's so hard to know. We're not in the room. We don't know exactly. We can read what, you know, the judge and juries felt and what people came out and said and like, but everything you have to take with a grain of salt, I feel like these days, good or bad, you know, like it's just, but yeah, in my mind, I kind of see them as like two separate peoples. There's Michael Jackson, the performer, who has this amazing collection of music that he performed and recorded and, you know, all that, which, you know, is amazing. And then, yeah, there's this other kind of just like a shell of a person, but that has all of this controversy, all of this, I don't know, other stuff associated with him. And in my mind, it's like they're two separate people. But I don't know.
it's hard. Crazy. Yeah. Yeah. He started performing with his brothers and sisters, right? With his family,
which the was Jackson really Five.
Yeah. And apparently, like, I don't really, I know the song ABC, that they did, but, like, I confess I'm not, like, as, I'm familiar with them in, like, the cultural zeitgeist, like, everybody knows who Batman is, everyone knows who the Jackson Five are, and, like, it is definitely a very fun sound, but, like, I confess that that is not, like, that is before my time, that's before your time.
Yeah, and I feel like there's probably a few songs that, like, if they came on, we'd be like, oh, I know this song, but you don't know it's the Jackson 5 kind of a thing. But yeah, except for that ABC song where it's like, I don't know, yeah, just everyone knows that. It's, you learn it as you learn your ABCs kind of a thing. But but I feel like that with most of Michael Jackson's collection in general, personally, it's never been, like, my style of music. But of course, like, Thriller comes on and I'll, like, bop my head to it, but it's never a song that I'm like, you know what I want to listen to? Thriller.
Yeah, or, I feel like, the same way. Yeah. There are a couple songs of his that I do like, and, like, when they come on, I'm happy, but I don't necessarily fill my playlist with it. Right. I do know the song Billie Jean. One time, like, we heard it on the radio or something. I remember Mom, who, like, at this point is the third member of this podcast.
I know, she really is.
But she was like, that is such an awful song. And, like, that started me thinking about the lyrics and about, you know, this guy who's, like, refusing to acknowledge his child. And, like, the lyrics, like, especially towards the end, heavily imply, like, he's got my eyes. And, like, it's like, oh, my gosh, this is a horrible song. Like, so now I feel sad every time I hear it.
Oh.
So thanks, Mom, for encouraging critical thinking and also making me sad.
There's a cover of that song. I don't remember who did it, but, like, it's, like, a slow cover.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like it because it is a lot more, like, morose and just which I guess I've never really listened to the lyrics. I guess it fits the lyrics maybe a bit more, but
maybe I'll look that up. Like,
but but in general, Michael Jackson's music has never been, it's not that I dislike it, but I wouldn't say I like it either necessarily. I guess I would say I like it, but I don't know.
Like, I do like it, but again, it's just not my style. And I think it kind of hits that place where, like, Elton John and Billy Joel and the Beatles kind of all live in, where it's like, even if you don't necessarily love listening to their music, we as a culture all recognize that they were extremely good at what they did.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think something I really appreciate with him is, like, I've seen videos of his performances and like his tours and stuff, and he went all out. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that, you know, despite all the things that were going on in his life, you know, with the tabloids and whatnot, like, he really did love what he was doing. And like, you could just see it in everything I've ever seen of his is always just filled to the brim with, like, passion, which is, you know, awesome.
Yeah. And, like, anyone who's ever worked with him kind of talks about, like, you know, him being an incredible dancer, an incredible vocalist, an incredible performer, and, like, always had, like, a vision for his tours and his concert of, like, how can we make this, you know, so fun for the audience? How can we make this, you know, how can I do better? How can I dance better? How can I do something new and innovative? Like, you know, so, like, that I really respect about him. Yeah, I, like, so I, even though musically I feel like I'm more in love with his sister Janet than I am with him. Like, Janet Jackson's an icon. I love her forever. But, like he was definitely so talented and cared so much about what he, about doing his job.
Right. And I'm sure, like, being there when those songs came out, you know, I'm sure that, like, those people who experienced that, you know, much different reaction to Michael Jackson. Because, yeah, I can't imagine, like, watching, I mean, Thriller for me is just the biggest one I know. But, like, and that music video is insane. Like, to see that for the first time with everyone else, like, that would be so cool. But for me, it's, like, old news. I don't know.
Well, this is kind of an interesting thing. So I follow this this YouTube channel called The Tribals, which is basically a channel put on with a bunch of rural tribal people living out in Pakistan. And, like, they don't have a lot of, like, television or, like, access to internet, like, sometimes. Like, some of their kids do, but, like, they themselves are older. And so, like, they're not as dialed into pop culture, and they basically react to music videos and things like that. And they give some really insightful talks, because, like, a lot of them don't even – can't even read, like, subtitles in their own language. Like, so they really – like, the host, like, translates the lyrics for them, and then they talk about the lyrics, and, like, talk about what they see. And Michael Jackson has come up a lot, and one of the songs, the We Are the World, that he was part of with, like, Cyndi Lauper and all those other people, like I don't know, they have a lot of really interesting perceptions on him and his music, because they don't, they're not as dialed into all of his lawsuits and, like, what the rest of the world is saying about him. They just know him as he's presented, and, like, they see a person who is doing a lot of good for the world, someone who writes about things like, what's the name of the song? It Doesn't Matter If You're Black or White. Like, that's probably the name of the song, actually. Or Man in the Mirror. And, like, talking about the lyrics of Man in the Mirror, and, you know, how he performs it and, like, how he visualizes it and all these things. Like, that's who they see. And it kind of has kind of given me a different kind of perception of Michael Jackson, of, like, this is probably what it felt like to be a fan of his, you know, in the 80s, in the 70s, you know.
Right.
Because, like, he does have a lot of ideas about bringing peace into the world and putting good into the world in his music.
Even in his controversies and stuff, that is, like, a common theme I've always seen with him, is, like, he wants to make people happy. He wants to bring joy to people. And that is, like, why he lives. And yeah, like, with his controversies, I think there are lines that got blurred for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we don't know exactly what happened, and I don't want to, like, dismiss anything. But I our mom, one time she was talking to me about it, and that's what her idea, like, what she was telling me. And, like, looking at it now and doing my own research, I understand it a lot more, what she's talking about. But I remember her mentioning, like, he just wanted to give kids the childhood he never had. And, like, as a kid, I was like, I don't know what that means, whatever. But, like, looking now at, like, the abuse he had from his family growing up in the Jackson 5, like, pretty crazy stuff. And then in that he basically was like a child actor star, you know, of an earlier generation. But we know now how horrible child acting stars, you know, like how rough of a transition and how rough of a life that is. Mm-hmm. And so like for him to have to go through that with absolutely nothing, you know, just insane.
No,
you know,
there was no support system at the time. And like, unless your parents were on it, like to kind of, you know, help protect you in the industry and look out for your emotional interests as well as your physical ones, like you were lost. And it sounds like his family situation was not good for even us normies.
Yeah.
Add all the money and the fame on top of it. And it's
Right. It's just so messy. And like his family life continued to be so messy for his whole life. But I definitely understand that idea. And like, it does kind of make me, I don't know, question some of the some allegations, whether they're, you know, true or how true, you know, especially when you look into some of them and how like the language being used in the communication, it seems very exploitative, like we're going to win big. And, you know, so it's hard because you don't want to like dismiss a child's, you know, emotions and like what they've gone through. But I also, my heart also goes out to Michael Jackson and the idea that like he was just wanting to make people happy, you know, which I think he had all this money and he was like, here's a kid who's young and I want to be his friend. And, you know, we don't know how far that idea went and stuff like that, but I don't know. There's part of it that like I get, like that idea of wanting to give kids a good life, you know, especially if you don't have one. Like, but where he, I don't know. Like I said, it blurred lines. We don't know exactly what happened behind those closed doors, kind of a thing. But
yeah, like I definitely was not present at the court trials, and I've not dug deep enough to really be able to say definitively, like, you know, this evidence is inconclusive. Like when I was younger and like the accusations were first happening, like I had the idea of like, well, if the court acquitted him, then like that's the end of the story. But then, you know, as a woman growing up and realizing how many of us, you know, we come forward with our stories of sexual assault, abuse, harassment, and like it gets investigated and like dismissed and no one believes us.
Yeah.
And that now I'm like, well, just because the court acquitted him doesn't necessarily mean like, so now like it's like, so it just makes it so much deeper. And it's like, you know, just because Macaulay Culkin, you know, his experience seems to have been very positive with Michael Jackson, but he's not the only kid. It kind of serves as a learning experience for me, I guess, in believing victim stories and like navigating like the he said, she said of these types of situations, I guess. And like, I don't know, going into these not with preconceived notions of like, well, that's not my experience. He would never do that. I don't know. Like, I feel like I hate to say like this happened at the expense of other people, but like, I do feel like watching this all play out in the media has been a growing experience for me in that like I've learned how to, I don't know, temper my thoughts and my gut reactions a little bit to like be fair to everybody in the situation and like find what the truth is. And if you can't find the truth, like err on the side of the people who are the victims, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
His situation also gets like extra messy because I was reading like his one sister, I think it was LaToya.
She
came out with like a bunch of allegations and wanting a bunch of money, and she was going to sell her story to the highest bidder kind of thing, but then backed out. And then once she finally divorced from her husband, she came out saying like he pressured her and was abusing her and forcing her to say all these things, which just makes like all of the cases against Michael Jackson like that much more like harder to harder to figure out, because it's like her story seems pretty obviously like made up, just chasing the hype, chasing the money.
But does that necessarily make Jordan Chandler's experience?
It's so tough.
But like, and how sad is that to like, whether he did it or not, to not be able to rely on your family? Because all of his siblings were like, they were going through it, whether they were in an abusive relationship, whether they were, you know, in their family, which seemed to be an abusive relationship at times to begin with. Like all of his family was going through life in a hard place. And like to know that you can't really rely on them to support you or to tell the truth or.
That's rough. I can't imagine like the anger.
If he didn't do it, he must have felt so alone. If he did, like, again, imagine not being able to trust your family to come out and say, like, hey, Michael, this thing you're doing, not cool.
Stop inviting little boys to your house.
That you would whiffle waffle on such a serious issue. Like, I would hope all of my family, if I were doing something so terrible, that when, first of all, you would say something before I got to court. And if you got to court, that you wouldn't, like, change your behavior just because we're family. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that if you came out and accused me of being a pedophile, that you would stick to your story and tell the truth
stick
as you
to
saw
the facts
it
and not help be like, well, I have forward. Some dirt. If you give me $500,000, I'll tell you the dirt.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the Michael Jackson I know. And the other thing that was big when I was a kid is I think he had just had, like, his youngest child, which for the longest time I thought legally was named Blanket, but researching I realized that he wasn't legally named Blanket.
It was just his nickname,
Right. And like reading about it, it like made it, as a kid it made no sense. I was like, he has a kid named Prince and a kid named Blanket? Like, what a weirdo. But they have normal names. But I remember another thing our mom told me, which also made me have like, I don't know, sympathy for Michael Jackson, is she was like, the idea of like naming your child Prince. Mm-hmm. And she was always like, I think it's cool that he did that. And I was like, why? Like, that's not cool to name your child something weird. And she was like, no, it's cool because he wanted his kids to always know that like they were royal, that they were special, that, you know, nothing that goes on in the world matters. Like, they are, like special. And I was like, I guess that is kind of cool. And like to nickname them something like Prince or name them Prince, you know, like, to give them that confidence, which is something I think he probably lacked for a long time. Michael Jackson is that sense
that
of
at
like,
least his dad felt this about
I am
him.
Worth something, you know, especially with all like the abuse he experienced as a kid, and you know. And so it is kind of cool, like, looking back at it now. And then the Blanket one I learned was just because he tried to, like, protect his kids from the tabloids and the media and stuff. And so his youngest was always wrapped up in a blanket and then nicknamed Blanket because he was just always in veils and hidden. And I mean, and I totally get that. And I think lots of celebrities understand that, like, trying to keep their kids out of the spotlight.
Yeah. Well, Judge John Hodgman, who, like, a famous actor, podcaster, writer, like, whenever he talks about his kids, it's like Hodgman Jr. and Hodgmina. And like, they have real names, but it's like, it's it's not your business, their private lives, unless they're adults and want to reveal it. Like,
right. As kids on the bus, though, we all, you know, thought the kid's legit name was Blanket and Prince, and we're all, you know, making fun of Michael Jackson for it because that's so weird and what a weirdo.
Well, and like that kind of brings me to an argument that I frequently have with one of our aunts, Rachel, who has very strong feelings on what you name your children and how you spell their names.
Yes.
And like every time she brings it up, like I am like right there to be like, well, like, that's not your business. Like, who are you to tell the mom or the parents of that child that they, you know, like, you don't know what they were thinking when they named them that, what influences they might have had. You don't know what cultures they might be drawing from, because honestly, most of the problems with abnormal names or abnormal spellings are rooted in racism and classism anyway. And like, but like, she's like, well, you gotta be able to know that you're not gonna embarrass your kid if you shout that name across the playground. And I'm like, why don't you just teach your kid not to bully people based on their names? Like, why on earth would you like imply to a young child that there is something wrong with their name? They don't think there's anything wrong with their name until you say it. Like,
right. And also, very rarely I think our kids made fun of for their name unless it is something truly weird, like,
but
Apple.
Even then, like, well, like, again, like, we name our kids Cherry and Rose and summer. And like,
yeah,
all sorts
dandelion, like in some countries, like tampopo, dandelion, himawari, like.
Oh yeah, no, I don't know. She had opinions about the name I chose for my daughter as well, so I understand.
Jane,
I don't
know. Like, Jane, the most normal name ever.
Yeah, she told me some ideas and what, because there's a movie. Is it What Happened to Baby Jane?
Oh,
and so she was like, "Don't call her Baby Jane." And I was like, of course I'm going to call her Baby Jane. She's a literal baby and her name is Jane. Like, I've never heard of this movie that you're talking about. And like, yeah. I remember Chelsea, after Jane was born, like went and watched the movie. And she's like, I wanted to watch it just to like understand what she was talking about. And it's like not even that weird of a movie. And I was like, okay, well, okay, great. Every time I think of Aunt Rachel and I think of my daughter, I know she spilled out that information and it's forever locked in my memory that don't call her sweet baby Jane. It's like, whatever.
And in my mind, it's like, why would you put that into the world? Why wouldn't you just not say anything and let that association die?
Like, so many amazing women named Jane.
Yeah.
So sit down and shut your mouth. Yeah. But anyways.
We do love her. She's a great lady on a lot of fronts. It's just, this is one area of life where we heart, like, I'm going to name my kid Qui-Gon and Natural Harmonian Gropius just to get back at her someday.
Oh, like, I mean, I agree. There are some names that are wild, but that's their right, you know, and it's no one's place to say, you should not do that. Unless it's like the spouse or the other parent of the
child. Well, yeah, when you're deciding, you can be like, hey, I don't know about that name. But it's like, once these parents decide on a name and that name is in the world, it is your job to teach your kids that I think their name is silly is not a good reason to make fun of people.
Right.
Like, if the kid thinks their name is silly, they can deal with that themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Sorry, that was a tangent away from Michael Jackson, but.
Yeah. But back to Michael Jackson and his kids, though, there were lots of interesting rumors that I've read about that are kind of wild, but like, kind of fun, not fun. I don't know. I mean, they're horrible because as a person, him experiencing the rumors around like his children not being his
would
be devastating.
Yeah.
As like a third party, like person just opening the window to this weird idea, it is kind of like fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad admitting it. Like reading these theories is kind of interesting. But it's also, like not my place. As long as they're happy and healthy, like,
It adoption doesn't matter. Is a thing. Right. Like,
doesn't matter if they're really his kids or not, but he says they are, so they're his. And he loved them, and they're his.
Yeah.
Like, that's all that matters. But it is, like, kind of crazy looking at him and, like, hearing all of these ideas. And, as a parent, I can't imagine people being like, that kid is not yours. Stop lying to us. I'd be like, what? What are you talking about? Like, I don't know. There were some crazy ideas. And then, like, just about, like, his sexuality in general. Like, so many rumors that, like, him and his wife never even had sex. And, like, these kids were just, like, I don't even know. Like, I don't know. It's some crazy ideas around him, his kids, and his wives and, like, those relationships. But, those are also not the people's right to know what like there was even he did an interview with Oprah Winfrey and she even asked like if he was a virgin and he was like, that's kind of personal. It just kind of, I don't know, people were so okay with saying outrageous things about him and it's really like heartbreaking. As from a human idea, like a human sense, the things that people were just saying to him. And I can understand why he, like, he had lots of substance abuse issues and like trouble sleeping and like personality problems and stuff. And I totally understand why people were not nice to him.
Not at all, no.
At least not during when I was alive at the same time as him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when he first started, I think people really liked him and were nice. But then, I don't know.
Well, as often happens with like the roll through fame, it's like there Mm-hmm. As long as you're doing what they like and making them happy and you're young and cute, they're really nice to you. But as you stop being young and cute and maybe, you know, dare to have different opinions or do something that is abnormal or weird, they stop like, and of course, doing something criminal or at least getting accused of something criminal, now they're really not going to be nice to you. But
Well, something that is, like, I kind of noticed looking at, like, his timeline is it seems to be, like, when he started doing, like, the plastic surgery and stuff that people started to take a turn. And I know, like, you know, it wasn't, like, all of a sudden his face and body was completely different. Like, it was a slow gradual change. Yeah. And our mom even talked to me about this. She was like, I know he, you know, he took it too far, but when he just had his first nose job done, I thought he was so handsome. And I was like, okay, mom, cool, like, great, thanks for sharing. But anyways, yeah, like, he did continue on that. And you know, there were lots of people that speculated he had, like, body dysmorphia, and, like, that's why he continued doing it. And then people weren't – I know he had the skin condition. You mentioned it earlier. What's it called again?
Vitiligo? I don't know how to pronounce that. I know. But, like, I know a lot of people who have this. They're, like, patches on their skin are – like, they don't have melanin or whatever, and, like, they are white. And, like, if that's happening on your face, as it does for some people, like, I can see how you might be very self-conscious.
And I think when that especially started affecting him, he also took a turn. Because then there was the whole, like, he transitioning, but not transitioning, like, his body was just changing from, like, black to white. A lot of people made lots of racial, you know, had lots of problems with him appearing a different race. And people thought he was doing it because, you know, unfortunately, white people dominated the industry and that would get him more audience and more movie roles and things like that. But, like, even after his death, like, they confirmed he legit had this skin condition, unfortunately. And yeah, that did lead to his skin changing color. And I heard, like, there's some ideas that he did use creams that had, like, a little bit of bleaching in it.
And a little, and a lot of makeup and things.
But it's a lot easier to make the skin match a lighter tone, I heard, than a darker tone. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it kind of makes sense. Like, if that was something you wanted to hide and didn't, like, there's lots of people now, I think, who are beautiful and embrace it. Embrace their, like, two-tone skin.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, amazing. But, yeah. Michael Jackson was not in that time of embracing. And unfortunately, he did what he could, but it made him look white. And then also, like, because of that skin condition, I've heard they're super sensitive to the sun. And so he's always wearing, like, long black clothes and always has an umbrella. And it made an image, this image of him look very abnormal.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, which, opens the door for all of that. Hate.
And there's no reason, like, it can't be a combination of things too, because, like, we know that his sister Janet, like, felt very dysmorphic about both her weight and her blackness growing up in an industry where, you know, Barbie dolls are always, you know,
a mixed race family. So I'm sure they experienced a lot of, like, you're not black enough, you're not Indian enough, you're not, because they're, like, a quarter Chinese too or something like that, aren't they? And it's like, you know, they're just one of those races that doesn't fit into the checkmark box, you know, and and that, unfortunately, has a lot of, I don't know, people have a lot of negative opinions about.
He has some quotes here that I'd like to read. Because he very often publicly said he was proud to be black, however he looked. And he wrote a letter to William Pecci Jr. in 1988, which reads, "Maybe I look at the world through rose-colored glasses, but I love people all over the world. That is why stories of racism really disturb me, because in truth, I believe all men are created equal. I was taught that, and I will always believe it. I just can't conceive how a person could hate another because of skin color. I love every race on the planet Earth. Prejudice is the child of ignorance. Naked we come into the world, naked we shall go out, and a very good thing for me too, because it reminds me that I am naked under my shirt, whatever its color." And he also says something like, "This is something I can't help. when people make up stories that I don't want to be who I am, it hurts me. It's a problem for me. I can't control it. But what about all the people, the millions of people who sit in the sun to become darker, to become other than what they are? Nobody says anything about that. And reading that kind of in line with a 2024 kind of vision about people who transition their gender, people who embrace their body, and people who change their body in order to better be who they feel they are. I feel like Michael Jackson today, he would probably still face a lot of, I don't know, criticism and discriminations, but I feel like people would have been a little kinder to him just because.
Well, there's a lot more understanding of, like, this is a real disease, and, like, I would hope that if, you know, he was a young kid going through this now, that he would just embrace his skin. That would be my greatest hope, because I feel like now, like, we see supermodels who have this skin condition.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's also just a lot more embraced to be different is okay. It doesn't make you any less, especially if you're already, like, so talented, you know, like, no one's gonna care about splotchy skin. But I mean, he comes from a that background that is not open to this idea. People didn't even think it was a real disease. The people thought it was made up.
And in the 1980s and 90s, like, you were not allowed to be different in any way. Like, you weren't even allowed to be gay, like, let alone, like, the thought of transitioning, or, like the fat phobia thing was not a thing. Like, if you weren't a certain weight, like, that was your problem. So, like, you know, if he wants to look a certain way in his face, or is, you know, struggling with his looks in any way, like, it is all a him problem, and we are going to hate him whether he does something about it or not, kind of a thing. Like, I feel like he would have had a slightly easier time these days.
Easier. Unfortunately, he still definitely, I think, had some form of, like, body dysmorphia with, like, because he had, like, chest implants for, like, pecs to make him look more muscular. I think at one point that got taken out, and then, like, his chin altered to look more, have, like, the more prominent dimple, more masculine. You know, like,
so he definitely wasn't really happy with the body he was born with.
He was doing a lot of things to be, appear more beautiful and attractive to other people, and just that he got pretty caught up in that. But something that I didn't know, and so, I mean, it's so interesting, like, as a kid, when I found out, well, it's not like, I don't know if there was a moment I found out, but, like, I always thought of Michael Jackson as a white man.
Oh, really?
Mainly because I only ever saw him as a white man.
Oh.
And it wasn't until I was, like, maybe junior high that I knew he was black.
Interesting.
And that he was from the Jackson 5 and then became Michael Jackson. And so, like, for me, there's still, like, a part of me when I, like, just, if someone says Michael Jackson, like, I picture him as a white man just because, like, he is not that stereotypical black man because of the skin changes, because of his cosmetic nose surgeries, like, because of these things. It is kind of wild to me when I, like, have to remind myself that, like, no, he's black, and, like, he grew up in a black family, and, you know, all of that stuff.
Right.
Which is just kind of interesting. And another thing is, like, his hair, though. And I never knew this, but doing the research here, I found out that, like, his hair got, like, burnt off, and he had to have
scalp surgery and, like,
which is
Pepsi commercial.
Crazy to me. Yeah, like, and I mean, I'm sure that's another big thing, because, like, when he was in the Jackson 5, big afro, and then he had, like, the curly hair for a long time, and then, yeah, at some point he got, like, those kind of greasy black wigs, which just added to that, like, weird, like, an abnormal looking person, unfortunately, like, with the really white skin, the long clothes covering his body, the greasy black wig. Like, it just, unfortunately, nothing really worked out in his favor.
Yeah, well, to create an image of things, like, also created, like, he was in a lot of pain, and so then he developed a dependence on painkillers, like. And he kind of is in one of those groups of people with, like, Prince and Elvis, and, like, they developed a drug addiction, but not necessarily because they were trying to get high, just because,
right,
like, which happens, unfortunately, to a lot of people today. And, like, today we're a lot more sensitive and aware to the fact that opioid addiction and the like can happen to literally anybody, not necessarily, you know, deviants who are just trying to chase the next dragon or whatever. Like,
I know. I had that exact same thought when I was reading about his, because, why he started the painkillers and, like, how horrible and painful that must have been. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure, like, because he did push himself to the limits in all of his performing, like, I'm sure he was kind of constantly in pain.
So, and like, maybe these pain meds, a little.
I could totally see. And then, no one batted an eye at, like, something prescribed being addictive.
Right, at the time, it was like, my doctor gave me this, it must be fine.
And I'm in pain, so give me one, you know? Like, I totally get it. And then, I know, I was reading also, he had tons of problems with sleep, which is horrible, because, like, if you're not sleeping well, like, your mind is not in the right place. And then add another addiction on top of that to drugs. Like, I can't imagine just, like, the physical torment his body was going through. And I don't know. It's pretty sad reading about that, those parts of his life. Like,
And, like, with the pressure he was under, knowing how lack of sleep can definitely affect these things, like, it does sound a lot like he was maybe also dealing with some level of undiagnosed mental illness, or at least
for sure
he was going through enough things that
he was going through so much
helped. Like
like, he had to cancel concerts because of, like, he would say health issues, which I'm sure were just, like, being overwhelmed with, court cases, all these crazy things being said about you and your kids and your personal life.
How could you deal with that with a level head? Like,
And then, like, you also have to go perform. I don't know. And then your sister's spreading rumors about you. There's just so much, like, I feel so bad for him. But I also don't want to take away from the fact that I think he probably did make a lot of mistakes because of all these things he was under. I'm sure he didn't think clearly at times of, like, what am I doing? Is it right? Is it wrong? You know, when it came to, like, you know, personal situations. Like, there was a time with his youngest, he, like, held him over a balcony or something like that. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he was kind of showing the crowd in kind of a very Lion King-esque.
That was my thought exactly, too. I was like, everyone else saw it as him, like, throwing his kid over the balcony, complete recklessness. Like, and, like, I get that on one hand. Like, yeah, that was totally stupid. But, like, parents do stupid things all the time is the thing. But, like, yeah, in that moment, there's a hungry crowd of people below demanding pictures of your kid. You're trying to have it. They're questioning if it's even your kid. Like, like, there's these insane people down there. You have this beautiful child that you love unconditionally. For a moment, you're like, here, take a picture. You hold the kid over the balcony. You're like, this is my son. Take a picture. I'm going to take him back inside. You know, like, just that split moment, though, everyone freaking out. He's going to drop his kid, which, I mean, is a risk. Like I said, it's a stupid thing to do, but parents do stupid things all the time. I do not necessarily hold that against him at all. But it is crazy how people, like, even just that twisted it. And there's videos of him after that moment, like, pacing back and forth in a room.
Right.
I can't remember where I saw it, but him, like, talking about it, like, I can't believe these people thought I wanted to harm my child. Like, I would never want to harm them. And he's just, like, you can see, like, the anxiety and just, like, frustration he's feeling while he's holding this kid that he just wants to love and, like, snuggle. But he's, like, so just mentally burdened by all of this stuff going on. And, it's crazy. Unfathomable.
Definitely a situation that, like, nobody in that crowd was helping.
Right. Yeah. I can't imagine, like, one of my daily mistakes having tons of people being like taking pictures like, oh, you let them fall off the bed. Did you see that you did that? That was bad. You can't believe you did that. You're a horrible parent. Like, I would hate to have that happen.
I used to work in a daycare, and like one day this small little boy was like throwing, like, I worked in a daycare in Japan. So this little boy was throwing a fit, and like, I struggled to understand Japanese at the best of times. Little kid Japanese is wild. And like, so like he's mad at his teachers. He's mad at the other kids. He's mad that I don't understand him. And like, I was holding on to him and he was pulling away. And like, it just, you know, in the tug of war way, like I lost my grip and he fell and hit his head on like the sink. And he was fine, like, thankfully. Right. And like, he let me hold him after, and he's just screaming like, "I hate so-and-so sensei." Like, and I'm like, "I'm sorry."
Yeah, you're but, just like
that is a moment that like still keeps me up in the middle of the night. Like, I can't imagine if like I were famous in any capacity.
Someone recorded that. And
and it went viral and people commented on like what I did wrong there.
She must be mentally unill. She dropped a child. Like, I bet she's on something. Did you see how shaky she was after? I bet she's on drugs.
Yeah, you know, and like, I bet she's not even sorry. And like, I bet she'd do it again.
Those are fake tears.
Right. Like, I already lose my mind enough just remembering that poor little boy named Rayo off in Japan who like probably has trauma because his little white teacher like just could not keep a grip on him that day.
Reality, that's probably not the first time nor the last time he's
ever probably doesn't even remember me. Like,
well, yeah, I don't know. Kids are so resilient. But I mean, yeah, this isn't about hurting kids, but people make mistakes all the time. People have lapse of judgment all the time, and like, I don't know. I can totally see someone doing that. Not, you know, for a moment, not like, and just some people are more in tune to those kinds of things, like a child safety. I don't know. And like, I don't know. I don't think he was trying to hurt his kid. I think he was just like, you know, here's my kid. You want a picture? Here's a picture. I'm going to, you know, like I'm very proud of this thing that I'm holding.
Yeah.
Anyways. It is pretty crazy how people spun so much of his life, and I don't know. It just seems like those last years were not happy for him.
No.
Which is just so tragic, because he did contribute so much musically to the music world and to the world in general. And it's like such a tragic end to such an amazing like start, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was an article in, I think it was the Calgary Sun, that I'm going off of memory here, but like one of the writers wrote an opinion piece on the Michael Jackson, I think probably the first Michael Jackson trial, if I'm thinking of the time right, but maybe it was the second, or no, maybe it was the one immediately after his death, I don't remember, but he wrote something where he said, basically it came down to, like, if he did it, he's dead now, he can't hurt anybody else, and like it was a Christian who wrote it, and he was like, and God has a ton in store for him, and the truth, you know, now that he's dead, the truth will come out, more people will speak forward if he did it, and if he didn't, the world owes him one heck of an apology. And that's kind of the take I give it. I want to let people know, like, if you want to do more research on your own, there is Wikipedia has it is Wikipedia, but they have a child sexual abuse accusations against Michael Jackson, but looking through it, it looks like everything is cited. So if you start there, you can like go through all the links at the bottom where they've cited their sources, and you can kind of dig in on your own and kind of form your own opinion, following the court cases and the like. And as we said, we're kind of both, it's a little inconclusive on our end, like, to really come down hard and say yes or no. But it definitely, it's kind of a thing where it's like, you almost can't talk about him without mentioning, like, some of the legitimate things he's accused of.
Yeah.
And it's like, and you definitely don't want to, like, minimize a victim's story. And but at the same time, like, if he didn't do it, wow, what an apology we all owe him. Like, so it's like, it's a tough, I don't know. It's so conflicting.
It's tough. It is definitely one of those things where it's like, only God knows, and he will deal with it how he sees fit in the next life.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we did not give Michael Jackson an easy life in the end.
Yeah.
But
one thing it does kind of, I don't know, bring up to me, for good or ill, is that perception sometimes matters. And it definitely does seem like in his interactions with children, Michael Jackson did cross a lot of boundaries. Whether he was, like, intentionally grooming them up towards sexual assault or he was being innocent, like, it is a learning experience for all of us to realize, like, you know what? Just because our intentions were innocent or whatever doesn't necessarily mean that this was okay.
Right. Just because I love kids and I want them to be happy, that doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want. Yeah. I don't know. Like,
and
inviting them to his house, all of that kind of stuff, definitely.
Yeah. And it's kind of one of the reasons, like, when I was working for an ice skating rink and, like, things in my church and things, like, they really started going hard implementing, like, this concept of too deep, where you have to have, like, a kid can never be alone with an adult. There always has to be at least two adults, or at least, like, a group of kids, like, enough kids to, like, be able to report, basically, on the person's behavior. And that kind of thing. And again, you couldn't be alone with a kid in a car. You can't be alone with a kid in a room. There always has to be another adult there to kind of hold you accountable. And again, we might think to ourselves, like, I'm not going to do anything. This is fine. Like, one of those kids is my son or whatever, you know. But, like, in order to keep each other all safe, like, sometimes we have to accept that our intentions are not the only thing that matters. Other people's perception, like, the kids need to feel safe. And if they don't, well, then we have to step up as adults and be better.
Right. A hug might seem totally harmless, but we don't know what a kid's limits are. If they're uncomfortable with a hug, then that is abusing them. Yeah, you have to be so careful and you have to, I don't know. Yeah, it is cool how we're learning a lot more about boundaries, you know, and teaching kids about boundaries and how to set them and what is okay and what is not okay is kind of up to you, you know. But then there are definitely things that are not okay no matter what. Like, you have to be old enough.
Right.
But,
And, like, in theater, like, a lot of theater houses are implementing this this thing where it's like, ouch, oops, where it's basically like, if you're having a scene where, like, you're kissing or something, a romantic scene, and, like, somebody just suddenly starts feeling really uncomfortable with the situation, they just say the word ouch, and the other person responds oops, and that kind of communicates to everybody that, like, a thing happened, I wasn't okay with it, and, like, it hurt me. And the other person can be like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean for that to happen. But it also doesn't put blame on them, like, and make them feel defensive. Like, I wasn't trying to hurt you, whatever. You're being too sensitive. Like, it's like, it's just, oops. Like, and then we talk about it and we find a better way to do it. And I find with a lot of these court cases where it's like a he said, they said kind of thing, that the people who kind of take that mentality of oops immediately, where it's like, oh, gosh, sorry, I'm sorry. Like, they immediately come out and they're like, hey, you said you were hurt. Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I will learn from this, or I will talk to you and we'll work it out or whatever. The people who don't, unfortunately, often have a pattern of this sort of behavior, because, like, the people who double down very often show you who they really are, whereas the people who genuinely didn't mean any harm are very quick to apologize. And so, like, it kind of helps me, like, I don't know, because, like, your first instinct is to put yourself in those shoes. Like, well, if someone accused me of this, I'd be so angry and, like, blah, da, da, da. And it's like, but what if you just said sorry? And like, again, I'm not, like, trying to say Michael Jackson, like, felt this or did that or whatever or didn't do that. I'm just, it's just another way for me to, like, kind of put it all into perspective, I guess, of how our world interacts, of, like, sometimes we hurt each other and maybe we meant to, maybe we didn't. And it's like, what if you
Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone messes up. I think that's, you know, that does need to just be accepted, that, like, we're all going to make a mistake at some point.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to have to say, like, ouch, or we're all going to have to say oops. Like, that's something we all have to do. I think, yeah, unfortunately, there are situations where people don't ever experience that. Like, Michael Jackson probably never had, like, an I'm sorry, I hurt you kind of thing. Or like,
yeah,
you know, so many lines were probably crossed with him growing up that he didn't know what is right. He didn't know what's too much. He didn't know like, oh, this might make this person feel uncomfortable if I do this. To him, it might be like, I care for you. I'm going to touch you and hold you. And it's like, no, you don't do that with a kid. Like, you know.
And he might think that, well, the kid never said they were uncomfortable. Like, of course, I'd listen if they said, but he's making a situation where they can't say they're uncomfortable.
And kids don't always know. They don't know always know how to say that, how to voice that. You know, there's always, like, power conflict. You know, this is an adult. This is a famous person. Like, I should be grateful that I'm here with them. Like, you know, and so you don't even know. And if it's not like black and white, like as far as where those lines, like what happens, even kids can be so confused as to like, is this okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I'm not hurt. We didn't have sex. You know, like,
yeah,
it's so hard to say, like, as a kid for them to be like, this is inappropriate touching. Like, for them, it might be like, this feels kind of weird, but, like, lots of things are weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll just see what happens. You know, I don't know. So, it's so tricky. Unless you are in the room watching it, it's like, yeah, he said, she said, no one really knows.
Yes.
I don't know. It's best to, teach kids to be okay with messing up, to know how to respond when they mess up, to know how to let other people know they messed up. You know, like, it's good to just teach them those communication skills so that there aren't those situations where it's like, no one said anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, we were just hanging out.
Right. Yeah. So as much as his music is impactful, for me, Michael Jackson is kind of just another reminder of, like, the world is complicated and, like,
we need to
apologize when we do something wrong so that it doesn't spin out of control and, like, check our behaviors. And we also need to, like, be kinder and more understanding to be, like, it just reminds you of a lot of different aspects of my life where it's like, I can be better. Mm-hmm. And if that's a silver lining to come out of all the awful things that he went through and or did, like, I'll take it, I guess.
like
if he makes me be better, then thank you, Michael Jackson, for your good or bad examples.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely left many marks and stuff on the world, good and bad. So, well, I guess we'll just end it there, but...
Yeah, definitely tell us your experiences with Michael Jackson, because definitely, yeah, he was not necessarily of our time when he was at his peak, but he may have been for you. And for all of you people who were maybe born after his passing, you might have a completely different perception of Michael Jackson. And I'm sure all of us have a very different perception of Arturo Toscanini. Very few of us were alive when he was around.
Well,
some of you might have been, though, and I'd love to hear about that. But
yeah, that's true. Yeah, let us know and tell us if we're wrong.
You can find us. We have an email at wedidntstartthepodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us at wedidntstartthepodcast@podbeat.com or on Google Play or anywhere where fine RSS feeds are captured.
What she said, yeah.
All right. Well, until next time, thank you for listening to us and sharing your visions with us. I don't know
and
what I'm saying.
We'll chat next time.
All right. Thanks. Keep it burning.
Keep on burning. Bye.
Bye.